At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kiries.ie
on News Talk.
I'm joined by Andrew Pearce. Andrew Pearce is a journalist. He is a broadcaster. He is a longtime political correspondent and political analyst. He is a friend of one of my favourite guests, Jeffrey Archer. He's been in the penthouse, always wanted to go to the penthouse. He has just written his first book, which is the story of finding his birth mother. It is entitled Finding Margaret, and it is filled with twists and turns. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning to you, Anton.
Obviously, the focus would be the book. Before that, is the penthouse as nice as I hear?
It's magnificent. And every year, I go every year for his famous shepherd's pie and champagne Christmas party. But sadly, last year Christmas was the last one. But I'm trying to persuade him.
Well, if you succeed, can you get me in? Can I be your plus one?
You can be my plus one, Anton. And it's a beautiful apartment penthouse with the most fantastic sweeping views of the Thames and the Houses of Parliament. It is extraordinary.
Now, the book, Finding Margaret, it is beautifully written and it has the requisite amount of twists and turns. And the intricacies are interesting because there are a number of adoption birth stories that have been written. But this one, to quote one of the social workers who you first met when you began the search, this is the most difficult case I have ever come across, ever. Without giving us spoilers, why?
Because even back in 1961, when Margaret Connolly had me, she had me baptised Patrick James Connolly. She was determined that she would never, ever be found. So there were never any dates of birth. There was no middle name. Addresses were always nursing accommodation. There was a name in there for a father who may or may not be my real birth father. So even back then, she was determined that nobody would ever find her. So she put me in the children. When I started the search, Anton, to find her, it took me years to do it because I loved my mum who adopted me. She was the great mum I had. I never needed another mum. So I didn't start looking for Margaret till I was 48. But I just assumed that she would have been probably 17, 18 or 19. She'd come over to Birmingham from County Mayo, where she was brought up. I was stunned to discover she was 34. In fact, she was just 3 weeks from her 35th birthday when she had me. She also kept me in the home for 20 months. Why? Because there was no prospect of marriage. It was unlikely a single mother was going to be able to bring up a child back then on their own in 1961, 62, 63, because society was very harsh on single mothers, particularly ones who were 35, Irish and Catholic. So at some point she decided to give me up for adoption. And I think that was when she met the man she was to marry. So when she walked down the aisle in her white finery in this church in Birmingham in 1963, her little fella, Patrick, was still in the orphanage, hoping to find someone to adopt him, which indeed he did. And I was very lucky by the people who adopted me.
I assume it is something that you must have reflected on a lot over the period since you met her. Do you think it is... It sounds like an even more difficult wrench to give up a child that you have had 20 months of relationship built with. I mean, maybe it is the same wrench, regardless of the length of time you have with the child.
Oh, I think it must have been incredibly painful for her. And she wanted to carry on visiting me, but the nuns who ran the orphanage, it was Nazareth House in Cheltenham, they were absolutely adamant that once she'd made the decision to give me up for adoption, that was it, no more contact. So she never got a chance to say goodbye to Patrick. I never got a chance to say goodbye to my mum. And then she had months and months not knowing anything about me. She would have been told eventually that I'd been adopted, but the adoption deal wasn't done between my parents and Margaret. It was done with the Catholic Adoption Society. Once she'd made that decision to hand me over, she was out of the picture completely. And there is no doubt there's a great link between mother and son, because when we eventually found her in Birmingham and we took advice from those same social workers who were astonished that we'd found her, they said the way to approach her is don't write because somebody else might open the letter. Don't telephone because it could give her a shock and she could hang up have a girlfriend with a friendly face knock on the door, which is what we did. Knocked on the door, nobody in. I was in a cab around the corner from the house out of sight. As I looked out the back window of the cab, Anton, I saw a dot emerging on the horizon. And I rang my friend who was waiting outside the house, said, "She's on her way. She's walking down the street." "Who is?" "Margaret. How do you know?" I said, "It's her." And that was even before I could discern whether it was a man or a woman. And I was right. It was my birth mother. First time I'd seen her in 45 years. Most extraordinary moment.
Did it go on then to be anticlimactic? Was it what you expected? Was it cathartic? Was it satisfying?
It was a lot of those things, Anton, but it was not like Davina McCall's happy adoption program on TV. Eventually, I did get to see her. She didn't want to see me there and then. Initially, she denied it was her. My friend went back to the door an hour later, knocked on the door. She was thanking God that she'd come back. "It's me, I'll see him." So she met me in the British Home Store in cafe in central Birmingham, her choice, not mine. And in the 1 hour we were together, Anton, she didn't ask me a single question about my upbringing. Who adopted me? Where I lived? Was I happy? Was I still a Catholic? Was I married? What I did for a job? Absolutely nothing. But what she did do was talk about the man she'd married, who knew absolutely nothing about me, her four children, who knew nothing about me. And when I asked her questions, she said, I don't remember the name of the orphanage. I don't remember where the orphanage was. Quite difficult to comprehend that she'd forgotten all of this. Had she buried it, or was she not telling the truth? And she said, "I can't remember because it was a sin." "What's a sin?" "What I did was a sin, sex outside of marriage." Pretty difficult. We agreed to meet again and again. And three times I arranged to see her at the same British Home Store. And three times she didn't show up. And I'd come down from London each time. And each time, half an hour before I was in Birmingham, "Yeah, I'll be there on my way." She was lying. She was never going to be there. So that was really distressing. Starts all the old feelings of rejection again. But she then moved into a care home because she began to get early onset dementia. So I saw her regularly in the home. She could feel there was a huge connection between us, and the fear of talking to me had gone. But I don't think, not sure if she ever quite worked out I was her firstborn child, or whether she was just happy to have a visitor and she would stroke my face the whole time and say, "I know you, I know you." And she completely ignored the girlfriend who I took with me, hardly even looked at her. She only wanted to talk to Andrew. And sometimes I said, "It's Patrick, Margaret," because I thought perhaps that's how she remembers me.
There are other surprises and twists in the story that I won't get into because I don't want it to totally give away spoilers. The book is called Finding Margaret, the author, Andrew Pierce. Andrew, the final thing then, did writing the book make a difference to you?
Hugely, actually. I wasn't going to write a book, but I'd got some great friends that your listeners will probably know him. Andrew Marr is a great friend of mine. And very few people knew I'd found Margaret and knew the story, and even how I managed to even get to her funeral without her siblings knowing. He said, "You have to write this book because it will encourage other people to find their birth parent. It will also tell people that it's not always, doesn't always have the happy ending." So I wrote it, and I found it enormously cathartic. I thought I'd run out of words after 5,000 words. There's 85,000 words in the book. And someone said to me, each chapter, it ends with a cliffhanger. What happened next? And it was cathartic. I felt much better for doing it. And I've had limited contact now with Margaret's children, of course, had to know. And they were in complete shock to know their mother had had a whole different life before she married their father.
It is a very enjoyable read and a very unique story. The book is called Finding Margaret. The author is Andrew Pierce. Andrew, I would love to ask you about national services, or national service being reintroduced as a last-ditch Tory attempt as we run into the next general election. Maybe at some point you might put the work hat on someday and let me ask you that set of questions.
I'd be delighted to come back and talk to you about what's happening in the general election. But that was I was shocked, Anton, that he's calling on a July election, and completely shocked that he's bringing national service back for 18-year-olds. That's not a vote to get 18-year-olds to vote for him. That's to get their parents or their grandparents to vote for him. Might work, you know.
Well, we'll see. Andrew, lovely to talk to you. Andrew Pierce and the book again, Finding Margaret. 53106 if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106.
The Anton Savage Show with Kiri's.ie on News Talk.